Welcome to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean, the natural vet, who's an integrative holistic vet who's here to help you make good decisions for your pet's wellness. We love cats and dogs and the people who care for them. We're here every week to take your calls about your pets, and we'll answer on the air any question you send us to radiopetlady@gmail.com. And send your mailing address for a sample of Whole Life Pets freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs, radiopetlady@gmail.com. Please check out all the wonderful pet shows I co-host every week on our network. Check out the schedule at radiopetlady.com. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is a production of 8 Paws LLC and Dr. Sean Messonnier, DBM PC, which are solely responsible for its content. And we'd like to thank our sponsors, companies we've invited to be here. Our number is 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-627-6008. Dr. Sean, how are things in Plano, Texas?
Very hot. Very, very hot.
See, when I feel like it's hot and muggy here, it's 87, and I'm thinking, I'm just a wuss. You people know from heat, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to get over 100 by the end of the week is what I've heard.
Ouch.
But that's typical for, well, we're not quite July yet, so it's probably a little bit warmer sooner this summer. But that's a good opportunity for me to remind people across the country, if you have the weather like we have, try to keep your dogs and cats indoors. If they have to be outdoors, shade them, fresh water, constantly fill up the water bowl because you're going to lose a lot through evaporative heating and that kind of thing. So just take care of your pets and prevent the heat stroke and all the problems we don't want to see in the summer.
Well, I couldn't agree with that more. And one thing I'd like to ask you about is, and maybe it's just me overreacting. To me, it's anathema when I see people jogging with their dogs on the pavement. It's like seeing somebody have a baby in the front seat without a seatbelt. It's like you just want to stop them and go, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Dogs were, first of all, the heat of the pavement on their paw pads, which are sensitive, even if they're calloused as they get older, they're sensitive. And the heat of the air and their fur and the fact that they cannot perspire, all they can do is pant out of their tongue. And these dogs with their tongues bright red from the circulation hanging out, and people are jogging with them. I mean, does this bother you as much as it does me?
You know, maybe not quite as much as it bothers you. I think you get bothered by things more than I do. That's probably not true because I get bothered by things that are insignificant sometimes. At least you get bothered by things that are potentially significant.
But I love you. You're great. You're right.
I kind of tell people if it's too hot for you, it's too hot for your pet. But then there are people I see jogging at 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon around here when it's 100 and something degrees and it's the hottest part of the day. You know, I think if the pets are acclimated to it, they're probably okay. I do worry about the pavement because even just walking out here on the nice regular sidewalk, we're not talking the blacktop, it gets
That's pretty darn hot. It is.
So you got to be really careful.
And I love the idea of keep them inside. You know, it's really in the hot weather, if you are a crackpot and like me wants to play tennis outside when it's 88, you shouldn't impose that on animals. I mean, dogs are not some sort of a creature like an Arabian horse that is sort of built for long-distance hiking. They're short spurts of energy. They're not dogs that are meant to run for 45 minutes nonstop. It's actually not natural. A greyhound, as fast as they are, they're sprinters.
Well, they're short. That's right.
They're sprinters. And these other dogs, like Labs, can work in the field. That means water, shade, trees in the field is what they're bred for, but they don't run nonstop for 40 minutes. So that's all I just want to say to you guys. It's great if you want to do it. You're a human. You can make choices and, you know, be sensible or insensible and take electrolytes and wear a hat and wear lovely sneakers. But, you know, the dog really should stay home unless it's early in the morning or late in the evening. I don't know. I just think that it's ridiculous. Exercise is great, but hyperthermia isn't, and people don't even recognize the signs of it, right?
No, that's unfortunate. I don't even recognize the signs for themselves. I know I used to be an EMT, and so I'd go back to school, or actually I'd be up at A&M year-round, and in the summer we'd always get people that are just pushing themselves in the heat, yes. not drinking enough, not taking a little break. And once again, you got to be careful for your pets. You know, these pets and people, if you really get overheated quickly, that can be a rapidly fatal condition. So, you know, quickly cooling the pet down, getting them to the doctor as soon as possible, but better just preventing that from happening is obviously the ideal thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you wouldn't make your child run for 40 minutes barefoot on the pavement, your little kid, who isn't set up to have that kind of exposure to heat either, sort of goes the same for the dog. Do you think it's kind of weirdly wonderful or wonderfully weird that we were both EMTs at another time in our life? I mean, are we aware of this?
I didn't know you did that.
I didn't know you did it either. Is anybody else out there listening who's been an EMT? This is a very strange avocation, being an EMT. I mean, it takes a certain mindset and a certain personality, and maybe this is why we get along so great, that we just indulge in weird activities. It's people, everyone I knew when I was an EMT, other than the people in the ambulance corps with me, thought I was a crackpot. They were like, you do what? 24/7 you wear a pager and you go out at all hours of the day and night in all kinds of weather, driving the ambulance, not knowing what you're getting into? It's like, yeah, really is
well,
a good feeling.
I will tell our listeners something.
Okay.
A lot of chicks find it really cool with men in uniforms, but the pager kind of throws that off. So
you turn into a geek.
And yeah, it's like the calculator on the belt loop kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, brown shoes and white socks. Well, the weird thing is that I want to hear what your EMTing was, because I think it's sort of – I guess that's why I get – kind of exercised about situations where something could go wrong and people are acting as if there is no risk, you know, like even not wearing a helmet when they're biking. Mm-hmm. And I think it's from seeing what happens when you do things foolishly and you don't think about the fact that there is risk left, right, and center. Even having dogs in the car that aren't secured, and then you're in a car accident that you didn't anticipate, that may not even be your fault. And, you know, is your dog alive, dead, often thrown out of the window if you've had the window down, or emergency personnel comes to extricate you and the dog gets loose and runs away and is never seen again. They're so terrified by the entire event. So I guess that can happen, I guess it's the way that people survive life is to not think about all the risks. So people who embrace rushing to danger, is there something wrong with us?
You know, I don't think so. I think, I mean, especially for guys, we kind of like the element of danger a little bit. Sometimes you can overdo it and then push yourself too much, obviously. But speaking of that, did you happen to see Nick Willenda cross the Grand Canyon on the high wire?
No.
Oh,
was
yeah,
it
well,
on
there
TV on one night that I missed it?
It was live on Sunday night.
Oh, my God.
So that
what
is like the
right?
ultimate thing. Well, you know, pretty scary because it's kind of windy up there in the Grand Canyon. But he crossed it in about 22 minutes. No net below him, no tether to hold him to the high wire. And he did fantastic. I mean, he obviously prepared for it and God was with him and made it across. But that's obviously the ultimate in just really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, that's someone who has to bungee jump but without the bungee cord in life.
That's right.
I mean, that's like a whole nother kind of person. This is – I guess he's from the Flying Willenda family, the famous
yes.
circus family. Then
mm-hmm.
he's not the famous Frenchman, man on a wire, who put the wire between the Twin Towers in New York City, of course, before 9/11, when there were Twin Towers, and walked between the two of them and was always looking for the most sort of flashy, dramatic place he could to walk on a wire. That's just a whole nother ball of wax. Well, people are wondering, why aren't we talking about dogs and cats? Okay, we're going to talk about dogs and cats, but I also think that sometimes it's kind of interesting for us with each other, and we've known each other for years, and the fact that this never came out is sort of curious, but it's important for people to know who we are as people. Now, in your case, you were an EMT. I don't know if you did it in college. I did it as an adult, and it was an all-volunteer ambulance corps in East Hampton. So.
Okay.
We didn't actually have uniforms. We had a uniform we'd wear on parade days like July 4th, Memorial Day, for funerals of people in the fire department because all the various towns, the whole east end of Long Island, all of Suffolk County, remarkably is a 100% volunteer ambulance and fire. The entire island of Long Island from the sort of the eastern boundary of it all the way out. So it's kind of – it's an amazing feeling to be part of many, many towns, many, many counties, many, many areas where there's that many people for zero money and a lot of pressure and a lot of inconvenience willing to wear a pager and show up when the pager goes off. It's kind of a very strange calling. Once you do it in the beginning, it's very scary and you think you're going to pass out. I mean, the first few times, because you don't know what you're going to encounter. And if it's something awful the first few times, I mean, there were people that their first calls they went on, there was someone who was dying, and that's really hard. But after a while, I think there's this sense that you really are making a difference, and showing up is just a way to show up. And I kind of feel like that sometimes with us and pets, that part of what inspires us to do this, it's not that we've gotten rich or famous, God only knows. It's this really good feeling that you can reach pet owners in this place with their pets that means so much to them and help them make better, safer choices for longevity, for health, for comfort, for joy. I guess it just feels really good to be there for people. Who is there for them other than their own paid veterinarian? I mean, where do they go to have this experience where they can call in, they can write in? The number, by the way, is 888-627-6008 if you have a question or a problem and you want to call in. But we also know that people listen on podcast, and the advice and the anecdotes that we tell are something that can resonate for them and help them if they're in a situation that they don't even realize that their pet might be in jeopardy, or they're dealing with a horrible disease like cancer. I know you had a rough situation this week in your own practice, didn't you, with cancer?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I know we've talked about cancer a lot on the show, and we don't want to obviously depress people, because I actually look at cancer as best I can positively, knowing from a natural perspective we can do so much more than a conventional doctor can do. We're not limited just by chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery. Those therapies can be very effective. They can be helpful. They can be life-saving. But they are expensive. There are side effects. They're not available for every pet.
That's right.
So it's really nice from a natural perspective. But each week I see so many cancer patients, or we do phone consults with people with pets with cancer. And when I see mistakes, I think it's worth bringing that up on the show just to try to help people understand maybe the better way to approach cancer and maybe save some lives in the process.
I would love it. Tell us the
story. Let me tell you a little story. Sure.
Yes, and just please.
Let me know when we have to take our break, because I don't want to get too long-winded here.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do.
Want to do a break first?
Yes, sir. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to hear a little anecdote that is going to be sad but might help the rest of us if we wind up in the shoes of this person. I don't know the story yet, but I know that it's one that's going to be resonant for all of us. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, feel free to join us or just sit back and listen. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Woruva, a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility, so it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Woruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands, are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those you're trying to transition away from dry foods. Woruva chooses not to make any dry food because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore, and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Adaptil can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and Feelaway diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feelaway and Adaptil as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who have just left their litters. Look for Feelaway and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. And there's a special discount from Nordic for our listeners. You put Pet Radio 13, as in 2013, in the code box. Go to NordicNaturals.com, and you're going to get 15% off everything you order for you or your pets every time you order, not just one time shopping, and free shipping on $25 or more. So go to NordicNaturals.com and put Pet Radio 13 in the code box. And, Sean, we're ready for your story.
All right. So I had a little dog that came in last Friday, actually. And first time I'd seen the dog, been to their regular veterinarian. I forgot exactly where they lived. It wasn't in Plano, but within 30 minutes or so of our office.
What kind of a pooch? What kind
little,
of a
little dachshund. And actually, the dachshund was not very old, about 8 years old.
Okay.
So came in for consultation for a tumor. And unfortunately, this is a tip for all of our listeners, regardless of why you're going to the doctor. If you're going for another opinion, it's very helpful if you bring copies of your medical records.
Yeah.
This particular owner had nothing. So we had to go by her memory, which may or may not be accurate, but that's all I had to go by. So according to her, 6 months ago, a tumor was removed from the dog's left hip. And the veterinarian biopsied it. After he took it off, sent it to the lab for the pathologist to review it, and it was a benign little fatty tumor. Now, once again, I asked for a biopsy to confirm that. She didn't have it, but she said she's sure there was a benign fatty tumor. That's fine.
Let me just ask a question.
Yes.
Just again, because we've talked so often and we always want to repeat it. Any lump that you see, the last thing you want to do is just watch it. You want to have the vet put a needle in it and do a needle biopsy. So after you and I have talked about it so much, I've now had every little bump and bump on all three dogs needle biopsied in the office by my vet, just like you do in your office for your clients. But why would you have a surgery on something which, if you put a needle into it, it would come out as lipoma, a fatty tumor, and you wouldn't take it off?
Right. So,
right?
No, that's correct. No, absolutely correct. So, you know, I don't know if they had actually done a needle biopsy, but for whatever reason, it was removed.
Okay.
Which, once again, is fine. You know, it was removed and supposedly biopsied. And the moral, of course, is if you need to take it off, if it's worth taking off, it's worth doing the biopsy. The
right.
only time I never do that is if the owner just says, look, I can't afford the extra couple of $100 for the biopsy. You know, I'd like to biopsy it. I want to know what it is. I need to give the owner advice. But if you can only afford to get it off or biopsy it, obviously you got to get the thing off.
Right.
But doing both is the correct way to treat these tumors. So back to our story. So 2 months ago, there was another lump in the area of the abdomen, chest, rib cage area. And the doctor took it off, and I said, well, was that biopsy? She said, well, the doctor decided not to biopsy it because it looked and felt like a benign tumor.
What?
Well, benign tumors and cancers look and feel the same. If you've listened to our show long enough,
that's
you know
right.
that.
That's
so,
right.
Okay, so now this dog, literally half of its entire chest is a big hard tumor.
Oh, jeepers.
So I said, okay, this is not good no matter what kind of tumor this is.
God.
And it turned out to be an aggressive mast cell cancer.
Oh, God.
Now, the owner didn't want to do chemo, didn't want to do radiation. We couldn't do surgery. It was too big. So I said, well, let's try some steroids. Let's try some supplements. And she wanted to start with one supplement rather than my whole aggressive protocol. And I told her I really believe the tumor that was taken off 2 months ago was the precursor mast
That's
cell tumor
right.
to this thing, because these things – just don't come up overnight, even though this
That's
one was
right.
growing quickly. It had to start somewhere. When we have a tumor in the same location that wasn't biopsied,
come on.
Common sense is telling me
That's
I'm
right.
probably correct in saying the tumor was the same tumor, same cancer.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the dog died over the weekend.
No.
So I couldn't help it. Nobody can help it. Of course, the owner didn't want to do other things that I was encouraging her to do. Don't know why it died, because it was, you know, back with her and her vet. But this was a death, in my opinion, that didn't have to happen and shouldn't have happened. Had we spent $200 more on a biopsy, had the doctor insisted on a biopsy, this dog would be alive today, because we would have known 2 months ago it was mast cell cancer. We
That's
could have treated
right.
it appropriately, could have given a lot of supplements. And the dog may have actually been cured of its disease and lived a normal, healthy, happy life.
Like but, my dog who had mast cell cancer did, it was the size of a pea.
That's right.
And they did a biopsy. And it came back as mast cell stage whatever, not, you know, it was two or something. And then they did a bigger surgery with wider margins. And
That's
that
right.
was that.
That's all
no
you
chemo,
do.
No radiation, nothing, because they got clean margins and they got it early. And how anybody could imagine that to not biopsy something that's growing on your dog. when you're already got it off. I don't understand. But and yet she took the time and the money and showed the concern to come to a holistic vet for a second opinion. But then it sounds like she didn't really want to do what you could offer anyway.
Well, it was a very, very confusing visit because I really wanted to do some things to help her. And it was an older lady. She brought her daughter with her who didn't seem all that interested. It's kind of like, well, Mom, do whatever you want. It's your dog. I don't care.
I see.
Which doesn't help. So,
that's right.
You know, I tried to talk her into some more aggressive therapy in all honesty. And I know this in hindsight now that more aggressive therapy probably would not have helped.
It was so far along.
You know, radiation and chemo might have helped, and then the natural therapies could have helped. But, yeah, it was so far along. And we don't know why the dog died. We know with mast cell cancers, they can literally die suddenly of shock. These mast cells can degranulate.
Seriously.
Have a lot of histamine and chemicals released, and these dogs literally go into shock and die. So I'm guessing that's what happened. I don't know for sure. But it was very, very disappointing to me. And so I decided, you know, I'd write a blog about it and talk with you and our listeners on the show tonight. Just once again, even if the doctor tells you to do it and you're kind of hemming and hawing, spend the extra money. Literally, that $200 would have saved this dog's life. It's not the owner's fault, although I guess she could have insisted on a biopsy. But when you're talking to your doctor and he says, look, it's a benign tumor. I felt it. It feels benign. Okay, well, he's kind of the expert, and I guess he said it's benign,
right.
And that's fine.
And he's making a terrible mistake.
Now, and truthfully, and I didn't go into this with her, and of course she's not a longtime client or anything, but my opinion, and I think I'm correct, this is a case of malpractice. When you tell an owner, I feel it and it's benign, now how we can prove it was malignant would be hard to prove because we don't have that tumor anymore, but I think you've got a good case for the doctor said it was benign, this huge mass came back in the same area as the other tumor. It's probably not coincidental, and it may be a little hard to prove, but I know intellectually this is malpractice.
Like you said, it's common sense. It's logical common sense. What I don't understand is why this doctor was removing tumors and not biopsying. Or biopsying, why did he even remove the one that was only a lipoma, which is a fatty tumor, which when you put a needle in and draw it out, just leaves a greasy smear on the. Why would you even take that one off at all? And yet you take one off the chest where the heart and the lungs and so forth are and go, you know, it's probably just like the other one, which is what we've been telling everyone is impossible because only Superman had X-ray vision.
That's right.
You can't know until you send it to a laboratory and have it biopsied. You know what it sounds like a little bit? How old was the lady? Like, really old?
She was probably at least in, I'm guessing, her 60s or a little bit older.
Excuse me. Hello, that's not old. That's only middle age.
I didn't say
days.
It was, well, I understand that, but
I'm not. We're not
older
talking about
in
someone
the sense
88
that I also see 20, 30-year-old people in my practice, too.
Right,
so, no, she wasn't
also
80 or 90.
Okay, so she's not 88 and a little confused.
No, she wasn't confused at all, although I think when I started talking, and actually I did aspirate it in the office and had to tell her, you know, your dog got cancer and this is not good, which I hate to have that the first words out of my mouth, but I have to tell them that. That all of a sudden people just kind of zone out on you. So I'm sure she was overwhelmed with everything I was telling her. But like I said, we tried to do something, not nearly as much as I wanted. Certainly it wasn't enough. But we attempted something at least, and at least I know we did what the lady let me do, and I feel good about that. I would have felt better if we'd caught this 2 months ago. You know, hindsight, what can you do? Other than learn from it and make sure other people learn that, hey, if your vet says it feels like a benign tumor, tell him you really want a biopsy. If he says no, get another vet.
Tell him, what have you got, miracle fingers? There's no such thing. He can't know that. It's just a dopey, inappropriate bad practice to ever say to somebody, you know what, I got this covered. I know
this happens every day.
It's so wrong.
Case after case. You know, I never used to see this kind of stuff, but since we started doing natural medicine almost 20 years ago, people are coming for multiple opinions or coming for a second or third opinion. And so I get to see what other doctors have done. And, you know, I don't mean to just pat myself on the back because we all make mistakes. We're all human. But when I see the mistakes that are made, I'm thinking, This never should have happened. This is not like, you know, you misread an X-ray, something was very subtle, you're not quite sure, you don't see this often. I mean, these are, you know, first-year vet student kind of things that never should have happened.
And I guess my guess is that someone like her was believing, well, it's just a benign tumor, so I'll go see that nice holistic vet I've heard about, and he'll just treat my perfectly well dog who just happens to have a gigantic lump that isn't cancer. He'll just treat him.
Well, I'm surprised she wasn't more concerned about the size of the lump, because she pointed out to me as if it was, yeah, he's got a good sized lump there. And I'm like, this is half of his chest. This can't even be removed. You know, this is not a good sized lump. This is, how does your dog able to walk? When, and she's like, well, I think it probably is causing him some discomfort. It's like, yeah, I think you're right.
Wow.
But
well, because
she,
her own
that,
vet,
you know,
had put her mind at rest ignorantly, stupidly, and foolishly. And she may have not wanted to do anything because she came to you with the belief that her dog did not have cancer, just happened to have this gigantic lump.
Well, you're right. You're right. And
that's,
you know, the other
now
thing
that I listened to it, she's been told, oh, we did one surgery, it was benign. According to her, I mean, without medical records,
too, yeah.
How do we know? But she did come with the belief that also this huge thing was benign. So she came thinking, not thinking death and cancer, just thinking this big annoying lump. So when you say, wow, this has been here for how long? And let me put a needle in it. Oh, gracious, this is cancer. She may have just gone right into denial and thought, no, 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 no.
And you know what's so sad? Mast cell tumors, 99% of the time, are very easy to diagnose with a needle biopsy.
That's
very,
right.
Very easy to diagnose. They're these wonderful, beautiful purple color cells that when I see them, it's like, this is an easy diagnosis, but it's not a good one. Having said that, though, it often is a good diagnosis. If you have to give a pet cancer, and this is assuming this is a small tumor like the one removed 2 months ago, mast cell cancer is actually not a bad cancer because
it's curable.
Surgical removal cures it. Then
that's
we
right.
use supplements to kind of clean up any cells that might be left behind, help the immune system prevent a second cancer. So, you know, 2 months ago, this was a curable disease without even talking about chemotherapy. We're just talking natural therapies and some surgery. So, you know, $1,500, $2,000, we got this thing cured without doing a lot for it. But once again, you've got to do the needle biopsy, find out what it is, or if they just take it off, at least biopsy that and make sure you got it all.
Yeah, or make sure that what you've taken off is as benign as you hope and wish and are imagining, which is all the vet was doing.
You know, and I'll tell you something, too, because this has to do with cost as well. And the owner might have thought when the doctor said, oh, it feels benign, don't worry about it, well, I just saved $200. That's awfully nice to the doctor. And, you know, as a doctor, you know, I struggle because not only am I a doctor, but I own my own practice, which means I have to wear two hats, doctor hat and businessman having to make money to keep my doors open. And so I'm always struggling with when I'm recommending things to people, you know, am I doing it to make a little extra money? Is it a good medical thing to do? I always try to go back to a couple of things. First of all, if it were my own pet, what would I do? Well, if I would remove a lump from my own pet and send it off, and I have to pay for it out of my own pocket, well, I can probably feel comfortable recommending that to you. I'm not doing it just to make a few extra bucks because that's how I treat my own pet. But more importantly, there have been a number of times in my practice where I'm like, you know what, do I really want to run this blood test or do this aspirate or do this fecal test? I'm probably just taking money from these people. It's not necessary. And I do the test. And boom, I find something totally unexpected.
Yes.
Literally save the pet's life. And it's like, I'm so glad I ran that test. I didn't expect to find this. I thought I was just going to charge an extra $30 and it was no big deal. It's like, no, if you practice good medicine, that means getting aggressive diagnostically. And yes,
being
a lot of the time, the answer is normal and they're spending some money, but isn't that a better answer to get than ignoring it? And 2 months later, you've got the cancer or it's an infection that spread to the family members and now you're facing all these problems. So I always just tell myself, look, it's going to cost more money. I tell the owner it's going to cost more money, but it's good medicine. We're making sure your pet is as healthy as can be. You're not going to catch the disease. Your pet isn't going to die of the cancer. We're jumping on things early. So hopefully most vets take that attitude as well.
I wish that more of them did. I mean, I hear a lot of cynical people, other veterinarians, not necessarily their clients and customers, saying that a lot of decisions made by vets are dollar-driven because the economy's poor and people aren't bringing their pets in as much. So – but I think it's really the way you describe your quandary or your moral dilemma and the fact that you have these ethics is really important for people to hear, to understand that that is a tug of war inside of the veterinarian. It's one that isn't inside of the human doctor, and one doesn't really ever hear that come up because usually the processes that are done are not going to benefit that individual, like family practitioner, doctor. They're going to have to send it on to an expert of some kind anyway when things get complicated. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's important for people to understand that you do think these things through, and one hopes that people's own vets do that. But when they don't send something out for a culture, I mean, a perfect example. And by the way, when you send something out to a laboratory for a biopsy or a culture or more exotic fecal to make sure, let's say, a newly found stray cat doesn't have roundworm, hookworm, or tapeworm, for example, that isn't money in your pocket. That's going to a laboratory. Some of these really pricey tests don't benefit the veterinarian personally, financially, right?
Well, I mean, obviously we have to mark some things up to cover our cost. But, you know, I remember one of my classmates was this was years ago, and he had a bill for somebody of like $500, which probably be $1,000-1,500 today. And the client was like, boy, that's a lot of money. He goes, yeah, half of that goes to the lab.
That's
and
right.
Truthfully, probably most of the other half goes to the government, the landlord, and your employees. And
that's
so
right.
Somewhere in there, we have to make a salary too and make a little profit.
That's right.
So, you know, we do have to mark things up. We obviously don't want to run tests just for the sake of running them. And sometimes I'll see some of these other vets, especially some of these corporation companies that own multiple hospitals all across
yes.
the country. They're very profit-driven. They have shareholders, stockholders. They're on bonus plans and all this. And sometimes I just think a lot of them are just running test after test after test for no good reason. So you have to have some sort of a rationale for running the test. And I think sometimes if there's any doubt, just run the test. Yeah, you're going to spend some money today, but you know, maybe and hopefully it's less money today than waiting. You know, I had a lady I talked to on the phone yesterday that I've only seen her one time. Her bill was probably $500 or something for everything we did. And she's like, you know, I just spent all this money. You're telling me my cat's got a thyroid problem now. You want me to spend more money? She's like, the cat's 13 years old, which I reminded her is not very old for my practice.
That's right.
13 years old. And she told me something very odd. She goes, you know what? I'm really not wanting to spend a lot of money on preventive care. I did, you know, when the pet gets sick, I'll deal with it. And it's like, why would you want to spend thousands of dollars on a pet that's sick that maybe I can't even help when you're spending hundreds on a disease we just diagnosed, mild hyperthyroidism. I can treat it naturally. You don't have the expense you're going to have a year from now when the cat's truly overtly hyperthyroid and we're talking radioactive iodine and monitoring
yes.
blood tests and all. But her attitude was, look, I just spent a lot of money. Why do I want to spend more money? I mean, the cat's fine. It's like,
wow.
I know the cat's fine. That's why I want you to spend a little more money and not
and
have to spend five times as much. Yeah. So I don't hear that very often, thankfully, but that's the attitude I try to impress upon people. Spend some money now so you don't come in with a dying pet. That's very expensive.
Right. And things get so much more complicated down the road. It's like when my Scooby-Doo had this recurrent infection over where the ACL repair had been done and the metal plate was inside. And to be honest with you, my own vet really let me down. I'm in a quandary, you know, how to have that discussion with them. But they finally cultured it after three different times. They should have done it immediately. They finally cultured it and found out that it was antibiotic resistant, but it would work with some antibiotic or other that they tried to sell me. I said, no, I will get it with my PetRx. PetGenius has this thing called PetRx that you pay pennies on the dollar for any prescription for your dogs. It's kind of amazing. But they didn't reculture it when the thing grew back. And they also didn't say, you really need to go to the surgeon. I mean, my Scooby went through 7 months of different antibiotics, swelling in the area. It had to be painful before on one of our wonderful Radio Pet Lady Network shows, Dr. Donna Spector on The Expert Vet, when I was just mentioning this like I'm mentioning it to you, she said, you got to get the plate out of his knee. This is a reaction to the metal that was put in there to repair the repair that was done 2.5 years ago. And sure enough, the surgeon said, I wish you'd call me the minute you had an infection over this site. And the plate came out, and he's still in the post-surgery recovery period. And he's already less lame with a gigantic surgery than he was with this thing in. And my own vet didn't send it out for a second culture, which Donna said was really sloppy.
Yeah.
That you had to send it out for a culture to find out more. If it comes back, then the antibiotic you gave for 6 weeks clearly was not enough.
And I want to tell you another story about follow-ups after our next break.
Okay, we're going to take a
break. That kind of goes along the same thing. I think people will be interested.
We need to hear about this because people, I had to go back to my vet, like rushed back in because some antibiotics had been started. And I said, the internist, I had to say who it was. I didn't come up with it myself. The internist on my show said, this needs to be recultured. Oh, okay. It's like, geez, I guess sometimes we have to ask for things that our own vet isn't even thinking of doing. So we're going to go to a break when we get back. Another example from Dr. Sean of, it's possible to miss things and we just need to not put 110% confidence in the medical care we're getting for ourselves or our pets. We need to be involved and use our common sense. We will be right back in just a minute. Support for this show comes from VaxiCheck. Are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxiCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. VaxiCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck. For your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Halo is a private company, partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy, inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Catatrack litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief Litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. We are back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk with Dr. Sean, the natural vet, and me, Tracy Hotchner. Give us a call. If you're out there with a question, you want to know, did your vet miss something? Did you miss something? Better to find out now than just figure, oh, well, it's too late. It's maybe never too late, or maybe it is too late. Give us a call, 888-627-6008. Dr. Sean, you had something you were going to add to my tale of woe about asking for a test instead of not asking for a test.
Yeah, this goes along the same line as the culture. So, I've always got very interesting client stories to share with you and our listeners. So this is a client that I saw last year, hadn't seen her dog in 10 years probably. So basically, they don't want to spend a lot on their pet, only come in when there's a problem, etc. So came in, the dog has been urinating, maybe blood, I don't remember the whole story. But anyway, had a urinary tract problem, did a culture to treat it, etc. And once again, she and her husband made it very clear, we're spending a lot of money on this dog, it's costing us so much. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, $1,000 over 10 years, that's probably a pretty good bargain, as much as your dog has had problems and we've ignored them. So, they never really kind of get it. And I think their attitude is always, we're just trying to do something for more money. So we did the culture. I've used some natural therapies, but the culture grew something else. So we added some antibiotics. And called them a week or so later, so we got to do a follow-up culture. Well, how much is that going to cost? We just spent a lot, blah, blah, blah. Never did the culture. Never followed up. So, I try to keep up with people. And I probably a month or two later called to check on the pet. Well, she still has the urinary problem. How can we spend all this money and it's not better? I said, well, do you remember reading my notes here that you declined the follow-up care I recommended, the culture? Well, yeah, but what good is that going to do? Wow. Well, I don't know if your dog still has an infection. Well, can't you just give the dog another antibiotic? No, I don't know if your dog still has an infection or what kind. We never did the culture to follow up. So, and they keep going on and on. 15 minutes later, we're dealing with the same question. But, finally I tried to say, look, if you want me to help your dog, we've got to do a culture. We really need to do an x-ray. We haven't done that of your pet's bladder. We don't know if it's got stones or not. These are things we need to do. Well, we'll think about it. Never heard back from them. So once again, kind of like the story with your vet, your pet and the cruciate ligament injury surgery infection, you know, you need to do some follow-up. If a client says, how come my pet didn't get better, I don't know without getting more information. Did we ever kill the infection? Is it a new infection? Is it the same bug? I can't answer that if you don't let me answer it. And then, as I told her, we're back to square one. You know, we're starting totally fresh, which means it's going to cost you more now than it would have cost you 2 months ago for me to do one more culture as a follow-up to see what's going on. Because now I have no idea if this is the same infection or not. We're starting brand new.
And meanwhile, it may not be an infection. I mean, Dr. Donna
That's right.
was talking about a case of a dog that had had three surgeries for calcium oxalate stones, which are the really bad kind. And the woman had been a really careful owner, had been on the right preventive diet, given lots of fluids, really been on top of it. And the stones kept coming back. And then the dog had these urinary tract symptoms again. It was a small terrier. And she said, let's just do another surgery, said the owner, and take the stones out. And Donna said, you know what? That doesn't make sense. We really need to do x-rays and an ultrasound. And they did a cystoscope where they were able to put a probe into the bladder and look at it
yes.
without surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire bladder was calcified, full of cancer.
Yeah.
That all these stones over time, is Donna's guess, had caused this inflammation, even though the woman had done everything possible and there was no way to save her. So, you know, to just treat for a bladder infection or treat for something with not even knowing which is the right antibiotic, much less the fact that it may not be a urinary tract infection. It could be something else that you could treat. And the dog must be in a lot of discomfort, right?
I think so many times it's either the vet not understanding what needs to be done next.
Yes.
Or the vet's trying to save the client money, which is not the vet's position to be in. That's the client to determine what we're going to spend. Or number three, the client just not wanting to spend the money at the time. And, you know, the antibiotic's a lot cheaper. Why don't we do that? Well, we don't do that. And here are the reasons why we don't do that.
We especially don't do it if you've treated with an antibiotic as if it were a bladder infection and the dog isn't better. Well, it's either the wrong antibiotic or you don't have a diagnosis yet.
That's right.
Or your diagnosis is more complicated. And I guess really that's sort of the rule of thumb for an internist, for a second opinion vet, and you as a holistic vet see a lot of second opinions. If the treatment – this is the rule of thumb that I should have – I've repeated it, God only knows, enough times on the air, and then I don't take my own advice. If the diagnosis and the treatment that you get from your vet doesn't work, isn't effective, you need a second opinion. Doesn't mean your vet made a mistake, but it didn't work. So just throwing darts at the dartboard is not the way to go. Unless your vet is very clear and very emphatic, okay, here's what we're going to do now. We're going to do an ultrasound. We're going to do a culture. We're going to do a this or that or the other thing. If the vet says, gee, I don't know, maybe we'll just try some more of X, whatever we already did, time for a second opinion. Time for another pair of eyes and someone to say, you know what? So far, you haven't done this, that, or the other thing, and you need to do those things to get more information. I think that's, you know, one of the things that people don't realize is it's actually great good fortune and luck and a privilege that we do have all these diagnostic tools that we didn't used to have.
Well,
right?
Here's the other thing you've got to think about when it comes to the money thing. It's always frustrating to me. Of course, we love to talk about pet health insurance and care credit and those things.
Yes.
But it's frustrating to me when someone comes in, they've been to one or more vets, all these antibiotics, all this stuff, still don't have a diagnosis. And I tell them, okay, I can help your pet, but your bill today is $1,000. I don't have that. I just spent $3,000 over the last 3 months. It's like, I understand that, but it was a waste of your $3,000. We have to spend it correctly today. And if you don't have it, then I'm kind of stuck as far as trying to help you because I can give your pet more of the same drugs that haven't worked.
Yes,
or we can try to get your pet better. I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. That's not to say we can't always use natural therapies. I'm just saying if we don't have a diagnosis, just throwing a natural therapy or an acupuncture treatment, well, I still don't know what I'm treating, whether it's a drug or a supplement.
Right.
You're wasting your money. We have to try to get an answer for you so we spend less money long term. And once again, some of these infections can become, like you were talking about the bladder problem, can literally develop into cancer or some really chronic problems that we can't cure.
And they wouldn't have needed to, but cancer is, right, an inflammatory situation in which you've created an environment where the cancer cells can begin to multiply and can grab hold. And mm-hmm. if you can dilute that inflammation or find out the cause of it and remove it or stabilize it, then you don't wind yourself up in a much worse situation later. And meanwhile, during all this, the animals are uncomfortable. I mean, they're suffering from whatever's giving them these symptoms. I mean, if a dog has something wrong with their bladder, anyone who's had a bladder infection knows this. I mean, you have burning, you have pain, you have just discomfort before, during, and after you pee. So just in terms of wanting to give your pet some relief, getting a diagnosis is sort of critical.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to do that. Once again, I know we're talking about spending more money. I appreciate that. I don't like to spend money either. I understand that. But if we have to do it, you know, isn't it better to spend some money now than a whole bunch later? Maybe a whole bunch later isn't going to work?
Yeah. Or you find out if only you had done X, Y, or Z, your pet would be fine, feeling fine and not having a long-term problem.
Yeah, that's right.
It's confusing if people come to a vet and then make it about what it's going to cost. If they would never do that with a human doctor, I don't think.
No.
If they felt ill enough to go to the doctor and the doctor said, I have to run this test and give you that thing, and let's say they don't have health insurance, I mean, because that's sort of the equivalent of pets not having pet insurance, which I have, but which, by the way, didn't cover removing this plate because I had switched health insurance. Because the old health insurance was no longer giving the good kind of coverage. And I thought, well, the only thing that could still happen to my older dogs is cancer. And they haven't had cancer, so they'll be covered for that because it's not a pre-existing condition. And Scooby's ACLs, well, they've both been repaired. So that's a kind of closed book too. Except for it turns out that the metal had to come out. And the surgeon, I mean, just to give an example of what something can cost. And I live in Vermont, and the specialty hospital is across the border, sort of near Albany. So it's not in the most expensive sort of neighborhood of West Los Angeles or, I don't know, let's say even Houston, or I don't know where the costly parts of Texas are. But the surgeon said, I won't charge a surgical fee. This is 3 years later, and he still views this as his patient and a continuation of a situation that has to be resolved or fixed. No fault of his. A great deal of time has passed. With him not charging me, it was $1,800. That's how much all the rest of it costs.
Oh, just the
anesthesia,
other stuff, yeah.
Surgical nurses, all that stuff. Just he didn't charge his fee. So these are numbers people have to get used to and be grateful that there are specialty hospitals or there are doctors who will tackle these situations and you know, make some sense of them. So we're going to go off for our last little break, and we come back, we're going to give you some positive, upbeat advice. We'll think of that in the next 60 seconds. The number is 888-627-6008 if you want to give us a shout. And if not, just hang in there. I'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month, while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. We're back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. You know, Sean, really what all this issue of spending money comes down to, it really is proof, positive, that you need to have pet insurance. It's not an option. Because even if you're that person who somehow manages to go 10 years, and let's say you'd paid premiums for 10 years of, I don't know, pick a number, $30 a month. When you go to the doctor finally, and I don't think most people are going to wait 10 years. I hope they won't. As the pet gets older, the statistical likelihood of cancer is enormous, and of arthritis, for which there's many costly treatments and many costly, things that can be done, can be given shots and so forth. You can't afford to not have pet insurance because these numbers that, you know, as you say them, it's like a $500 visit, a $1,000 visit, a $1,600 or $1,700 surgery with the surgeon's fee not in it. I mean, these numbers are enormous, and this is for just some diagnosis, not even treatment, not even major surgeries.
No, you're right. And, you know, I love it when people have pet insurance because it means we can do what we need to do, assuming they've got the right insurance, of course, because some are better than others. But it means I can pretty much do what I want to do. I don't have to see the people hem and haw. Should we treat it? Can we not treat it? Can we cut corners? What can we do? It's just like, yeah, do whatever you got to do. And, you know, they know what their cost is going to be, which is 10-20%.
That's right.
You know, I'm allowed to charge whatever I need to charge. I don't have to hold back on testing because maybe the client can afford it or not. I mean, we should hold off. No, let's just get to it, solve the problem, find out what needs to be done, and then just do what needs to be done.
And I can't tell you what a peace of mind that is for both the doctor and the owner, because there are owners who sometimes won't go in. There are people who sometimes won't go into their own doctor or dentist because they can't afford it and they're afraid that it will cost a lot. On the other hand, there are people that might do the same thing with their pets. So they hold off going in knowing that the animal is not well, that something is growing, a huge tumor on their chest or urinary tract problems or whatever the symptoms may be. And they may feel guilty about it and conflicted and, you know, pulled both ways because they really do love their pets, but they really don't think they have the money where they would have had the money to pay the premiums. I mean, that amount of money they easily could have parted with on a monthly basis if they understood how big the number was later. So they hold off coming in. And then when they come in, the big elephant in the middle of the room is, well, what's it going to cost? Because if it's going to cost more than $50, which nothing costs really much anymore, then I can't do it. But those people aren't doing that because they don't love their pets. They're doing it because that's their true economic situation. And they don't understand that how pet insurance works is that the owner pays and the pet insurance pays them right back 80 or 90% of it if they've gotten Healthy Paws or Embrace or Trupanion, some of the very good companies. It's as simple as that. You fax or email or mail the paid receipt from your doctor's office, and they send you back a check or direct deposit into your bank account or to your credit card, 80 to 90% of that bill. I mean, it's pretty slick, and it gives you the freedom to do what you need to do as a doctor.
Yeah, I really like that. So I guess the moral of tonight's story will be get pet health insurance. There are different ones. Talk to your vet. And if you're open to, hopefully, natural therapies, which is what we talk about in our show a lot, make sure your pet health insurance covers natural therapies. Many do not. So be aware of that.
That's right. That's really important because, especially for this show and for these listeners, people that are listening to us, they want the holistic way of going that you do. And a lot of the really good pet insurance companies respect and admire acupuncture, chiropractic, hyperbaric oxygen, all kinds of alternative ways of solving things. Dr. Sean, another great show. Love spending time with you. Hey, next week is the first Tuesday in July. So you're off. You get to have July 4th off. I'll be here with Anne Marie Sawicki, the animal communicator.
We'll have fun with her and y'all have a good 4th. And speaking of 4th of July, talk to your vets now if you need to do something, if your dogs or cats have thunderstorm phobias. But the main thing is no ACE promazine, no ACE.
No ACE, but you could go to petcarenaturally.com and get Adaptil and Feel Away. Perfect time to start using it. Very calming. Have a great night, Dr. Sean. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. Hugs and kisses to your dogs and cats. We'll talk again next week. And tomorrow night is Dog Travel Experts. Hang out with us at the same time. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.